Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Night Angel Trilogy, Shadow's Edge, Part 2. Created by Brent Weeks. Narrated by Dylan Lynch. With performances by Eric Messner, Laura Quinn Anderson, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Hazelford, Tim Getman, M.B. Van Dorn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Rick Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Johann Detweiler, Tony Penny, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Toison. Shadow's Edge, Part 2. When V woke, bound tightly at wrists, ankles, elbows, and knees, the first thing she saw was a middle-aged woman with thin, graying brown hair, a thick slab of body, the stance of a woman who had never worn anything but practical shoes, a round, lined face, and piercing eyes. The Maja was staring at her. A fire was burning behind V, and a small bundle near her that was probably Yuli, bound in trust like she was. V was gagged. Not just some little gag of a handkerchief tied around her mouth. A serious gag.
Before we start, V, I want to tell you something very important. If you do escape from me, which you won't, do not run into the forest. Have you ever heard of the Dark Hunter?
V scowled as well as she could with her mouth stuck partially open, then decided she had nothing to lose by letting the old woman talk. She shook her head.
That would explain why you were rushing headlong into death, I suppose. I'm Sister Ariel Wyant-Safaste. The Dark Hunter was created some 600 and maybe 50 years ago by a magus named Ezra. Perhaps the most talented magus who ever lived. Ezra was on the losing side of the War of Darkness. He was one of Jorsen Alkesti's most trusted generals. The kind of man who seemed to be able to do everything. And everything he did superlatively. I'm sorry. Superlatively means he did everything excellently.
I don't want to die.
What? Never mind. Ezra created a creature that sensed magic and certain kinds of creatures that are now extinct. Cruel, ferozzi, ferali, blamer, and what have you. For which you may thank whatever gods your superstitions support. He created this perfect hunter too well, and he couldn't control it. It began killing anyone with the talent, escaping while Ezra slept. Finally, they battled. Of course, no one knows what happened because no one was there. But the talented children of Taurus Bend stopped dying, and no one ever saw the Dark Hunter again, nor Ezra. However, whatever Ezra did, it didn't kill the Dark Hunter. He only walled it in. Here, about 10 paces north of where I regrettably had to kill your horse, is the first ward. That ward marks you for death. Every magus or maja or meister to attempt Ezra's ward in 600 years has died. Powerful magus carrying potent artifacts died. Those artifacts in turn lured other magus and so forth. Whatever happens in the wood, even if the Dark Hunter is a myth, whatever happens there, no one comes back. So if you escape, don't go north. You'll pardon me if I'm not doing this right. I've never kidnapped anyone before. Unlike you.
Shit!
Oh yes, Yulisandra was rather eager to tell me all about you, wet boy.
Double shit!
But about that, you're not a wet boy, V. You're not even a wet girl. Oh, there have been such things, but what you are is a Maja Uxtra Coruculus. A bush mage. A wild mage.
Wachel! Wachel!
Oh, you don't believe me. A wet boy, V, even of the female variety, can use her talent without speaking. So if you are a wet boy, why don't you escape?
There was nothing. Nothing in all the world that V couldn't stand as much as feeling helpless. She'd rather have Hugh paw her hair. She'd rather have the God King mount her.
I really don't like this. I hope you'll realize that someday. I'm going to take off your gag, understand? You can't get away from me, even with your talent. And you'll have to learn that sooner or later, so we might as well make it clear now to spare you as much pain as possible. But before you fight me, I do expect your first words to be curses or lies or an attempt to use magic. So before you do that, I'd like to ask you a question. Who is the extremely talented Wordmeister that put this spell on you?
Thoughts of escape evaporated. It was a bluff. It had to be a bluff. But how?
Nisus, what did the bastard do to me?
Because that spell is really something. I've been studying it for the past 6 hours while you've been unconscious, and I still can't tell whether it does. One thing I do know is that it's trapped. It definitely bears the marks of being a man's magic. He's anchored it in some interesting ways. I'm considered strong among my sisters. One of the stronger magic within the colors in the last 50 years. And it's too strong for me to break. That's clear immediately. You see, there are weaves you can unravel, and there are weaves you have to burst. Fordea knots, if you will. Are you familiar with Fordea knots? Never mind. This spell has both. The traps might be unraveled, but the core weave will have to be broken most carefully. Even if I could do it myself, it would probably leave you with some permanent mental damage. What?
Oh! Oraya Silento!
The bonds fell from V's face. She spat out the handkerchief. It had been wrapped around a rock. The bitch. She didn't grab her talent. Not yet.
The rest? Sorry. It's a little hard to talk to you while lying on my side.
Fair enough. Loveos!
V's body was pulled upright and scooted backward to a tree.
So that's your bait? A bluff about some spell on me that won't be able to take off until we get to the Chantry? Where it just so happens it will be impossible for me to escape.
That's it.
That's pretty good bait.
Better than we offer most girls.
You always kidnap girls?
Like I already said, this is my first time. It doesn't usually come down to kidnapping. The sisters who do the recruiting have lots of ways to be persuasive. I was deemed too tactless for such work.
What's the usual bait?
Just to be like the recruiters who tend to be beautiful, charming, respected, and last but not least, always get their own way.
And the hook is?
Oh, we're continuing this fishing metaphor.
What?
Never mind. The hook is servitude and tutelage. It's like an apprenticeship. 7 to 10 years of service before you become a full sister. Then you're free.
You said I'm not really a wet boy. I do all the wet boy stuff.
Have trouble with the embrace of darkness, don't you?
What?
Invisibility. You can't do it, can you?
That's just a legend. It drives up prices. No one goes invisible.
I can see you're going to spend a lot of time on learning things you think you know. True wet boys can go invisible. But mages don't do invisibility. Your talent has to practically live in your skin. Invisibility requires a total body awareness so profound that it extends to feeling how light is touching every part of your skin. What you are is something different. In fact, something forbidden by a treaty 138 years old. The Aletherans will be, shall we say, highly overwrought if we trained you this way. You see, if you mastered a few more things, you'd be a war mage. Oh, you're going to cause the speaker a few headaches. I can see that already.
Fuck you!
You will speak civilly.
Fuck you!
Let's settle something now, then. Loveos obreas loveas gracos!
V was yanked to her feet. Her bonds dropped away. A dagger flew from her pack and dropped at her feet. V didn't reach for the knife. She didn't stop to take the time.
Fuck you!
She focused her talent into a titanic punch into Sister Ariel's stomach. Ariel flipped over the fire and skidded across the dirt on the other side. But V didn't move. She didn't even try to run. She was looking at her drooping hand. It was like she'd punched steel. Bones were sticking out of her skin. Her knuckles were a mass of blood. Her wrist was broken. Both bones in her forearm had snapped. One of them was pressing against the skin from underneath, threatening to jut out. Sister Ariel stood and shook her big, loose dress. Dust puffed out.
You should really strengthen your bones before you strike with your talent.
I did.
Then you shouldn't punch an armored Magia. It seems you've more talent than sense. Not to worry, that's common enough. We know how to deal with it. The truth is, V, that your body magic is untrained, undefined, and no match for any schooled sister. You could be so much more. Do you even know how to heal yourself?
V was shaking. She looked up dumbly.
Well, if you ever want to use your hand again, I can heal it. But it hurts, and I'm slow.
V offered up her arm, mute.
Just a second. I need to ward Yuli's ears. Otherwise, your screams will wake her.
I won't scream.
As it turned out, she lied. Logan froze. Another time, he might have tried to get everyone down to build their tower again once Gorky was gone. But he knew he'd never summon the strength to try it again.
What's going on down here?
Pressing into the wall as much as he could, Logan looked up and saw that Finn was doing the same thing, and sitting on his shoulders, Lily was too. Torchlight slanted through the grate as Gorky came the last few feet. From where he was standing now, Lily was only a few feet from his shoes. With the sheer edges of the hole below the grate, though, the torchlight wouldn't fall on Lily unless he stepped closer.
Animals! You stink worse than usual! Why don't you wash yourselves? What's going on down there? I heard some noise. What you doing?
The torch shifted again and light dipped perilously close to Lily. Gorky was walking around the grate, holding up the torch, staring as deep into the hole as he could. He was moving counterclockwise, away from them first. The holers were frozen. None of them were cursing or fighting or talking or anything. It was a dead giveaway. Only Natasa moved away from Logan. The light cut a path across the grate and lit up Lily's entire head.
Go to hell, Gorky!
Oh, who's... Ah, it's me, little girl, isn't it?
You see my face, Gorky? This is the last thing you're ever going to see, because I'm going to kill you.
Oh, you got an oath on you, don't you? But then you already showed me that before we sent you down there, didn't you, around my penis?
Fuck you!
Ooh, did that too? You were the hottest little thing I'd had in years. You've been letting the rest of them boys have a piece, I was your first, though. You never forget your first. You'll never forget me, will ya? How's Lily taking it? I'm sure all them boys would rather stick you than that old whore. How's it going, Lily? Competition getting fierce all of a sudden. Where are you, Lily?
I threw that bitch down the hole.
Logan was shaking so hard he could barely stand.
No shit! You are a little wild cat, aren't you? I bet you even tempt our virginal little king, don't you? You banged her yet, king? I know Lily was a little scabby for you, but this is some fine meat, eh, king? Where are you?
Across the hole, Tat stepped forward.
Fuck you!
Muffled, it sounded almost like Logan. At the quick thinking, Logan felt a rush of warm feeling for the holers. Gods, they were all in this together. And they'd get out together, too.
All right, well, it's been fun. You all let me know when you're hungry. Oh, I got extra steak tonight. And I'm so full, I don't think I could force another bite down.
Logan had no strength left. He wanted to cry out. His body felt so weak. He couldn't even feel himself standing. He just knew that if he tried to move, he'd collapse. His body was bathed in cold sweat. His vision was blurring.
He's gone. Just hold on, Logan. We're close.
What are you doing? Lily, what the hell?
I didn't even touch it, I swear!
Get down!
But it was too late. There was already the sound of running steps, and a moment later Gorky was over the grate, Lily and Finn and Logan fully lit by his torch. With savage speed, he smashed Lily in the face with the butt of his spear. Even as the bodies landed on him, crushing him to the sloping stone floor, Logan saw his treasure, the key he had saved for months, fly free of Lily's hand. It rang as it bounced off the stone floor, gleaming in the cutting light of the torch, and fell into the hole. Every one of his hopes, every dream was tied to that key. As it disappeared into the hole, it dragged them along with it. A second of fragile peace passed as every eye watched the key disappear. Then, one by one, the holders grasped the new reality, which was just like the old reality before they'd known the key existed. Finn punched Logan in the face. Logan couldn't stop him. Finn was too strong. All of Logan's strength was exhausted. He felt limp. The blow sent Finn flying, tumbling right to the edge of the hole. It was Nasher, and he crouched over Logan, baring his teeth. On his hands and heels, Finn scrambled to get away from Nasher. When Nasher didn't follow, Finn stood slowly. Logan tried to sit up, but his body refused to obey. He couldn't even move. The world swam before his eyes.
I'll get the new bitch first.
God be merciful.
You'll be the first to die, you asshole!
Natasa was trembling, holding the dagger like she had no idea what to do with it. The holers, the fucking animals, surrounded her on three sides. She retreated to the edge of the hole, slashing at the air with a dagger.
Sweet meat, boys! Sweet meat!
No! No! Not safer! Safer, please!
Nasher didn't move. He was making everyone stay away from Logan. Natasa saw it. If she could only get to Logan's side of the hole, everyone's fear of Nasher would keep them back. But Finn saw it too. He unlimbered a coil of rope into a lasso.
You can make this easy. You can make it hard.
Natasa looked at him, her eyes fixed on the lasso in his hands, as if she'd forgotten the dagger in her own. She looked across the hole and met Logan's eyes.
I'm sorry, Logan.
She stepped into the hole.
Shut up and listen! Sometimes you can hear him hit the bottom!
And the bastards, the animals, the monsters, they did shut up and listen, hoping to hear a body smash against the rocks below. They were too late.
What a waste.
Oh, now we only got one pussy left.
Damn. This really sucks.
Come here, Louie.
Logan's tears were as hot as his fever.
Now who the fuck's Logan? King, was she talking to you?
Logan closed his eyes. What did it matter anymore?
It's time, Farty. He's not crazy enough to follow us across this.
There were 1,400 feet up Mount Hezron, the tallest mountain on the Karen border. So far, the hike had been arduous, but the worst exposures had been of a dozen feet. From here, there were two ways over the mountain, through the notch to one side or straight across the face. Furl had nearly started a brawl at the last village by asking which way a brave man in a hurry would go. Some of the villagers maintained that the face was never a good option, but that it would be especially bad this time of year. Even a light dusting of snow or freezing rain would make the path suicide. Others had maintained that going over the face was the only way to make it through the mountains before the snows hit. Getting stuck in the steeps and the deeps that made the Devil's Pass through the notch would be certain death if it snowed, and snow was coming. Baron Kirov wasn't doing well. He was so scared of heights, he'd been crying.
If he'd be crazy to follow us, what does that make us?
Eager to live. I grew up in mountains tougher than this. Follow or fall?
Can't you leave me?
Baron Kirov was pathetic. Furl had brought him along because he didn't know what would happen when he fled, and he'd wanted a bargaining chip. But maybe it had been a mistake. The fat man had slowed him down.
They want you alive. If you stay here, that Werkmeister will blast me off the rock. If you're with me, he might not.
Might not?
Move, Farty!
Furl Callius looked at the dark clouds grimly. His tribe, the Tana, was a mountain tribe. He was one of the best climbers he knew, but he'd never liked climbing. Battle, he liked. Battle made you feel alive. But climbing was arbitrary. The mountain gods capricious. He'd seen the most devout clansmen plunge to his death when he'd put his weight on a stone that had held Furl, who was heavier, only a moment before. In battle, a stray arrow might kill you, of course, but you could move, you could fight. Death might still come, but it wouldn't find you scared, clinging to a bit of rock with slick fingers, praying against the next blast of wind. This traverse wasn't the worst he'd seen. It climbed perhaps 100 feet, and its entire length was narrow, maybe 3 feet wide. 3 feet was pretty damn wide. It was the sheer drop that made that 3 feet seem ever so much smaller. Knowing that if you slipped, you had absolutely no chance of catching yourself, that stumbling meant certain death, that did things to a man. It was doing things to Fatty Kirov. The Baron, unfortunately, had no idea why he was important. Furl hadn't been able to find out anything either. But Fatty was important enough that the God King had sent a Werdmeister after them.
You're going first, Fatty. I'll take all the gear, but that's all the mercy you get.
It wasn't mercy, it was practicality. Fatty would go slower with a pack, and if he fell, Furl didn't want to lose his supplies.
I can't do it! Oh, please!
Furl drew his sword. The sword he'd given so much to protect. The sword that would make him a clan warlord. It was everything a warlord could want. A perfect sword. Down to the Highland runes on the steel that Furl recognized, but couldn't read.
Take your chances with the path, or take your chances with the sword.
The Baron started onto the path. Surprisingly, Fatty made good time. Furl had to slap him once with the flat of his blade when he froze up and started scooting. They didn't have time to scoot. If they weren't far away from the Werdmeister when he made it out of the trees, Furl was dead. He'd chosen to go behind Fatty because it was the only way to keep the man moving. But it meant that he was exposed to whatever magic the Werdmeister threw at them. If they weren't far enough away to make the Werdmeister worry that he would kill the Baron, it would be all over.
The path is getting narrower.
The Werdmeister's out of the woods. We've got no choice.
The Baron started shuffling forward, his face pressed to the rock, his arms spread-eagled. Behind them, the Werdmeister was standing with his fists on his hips, furious. Furl looked ahead. Another 30 paces and just one more hard section where the ledge narrowed to a foot and a half across. Fatty was sucking down the thin air, frozen.
You can do this! I know you can!
Miraculously, Fatty started moving, shuffling, but with confidence, as if he'd found some well of courage in himself that he'd never known he had.
I'm doing it!
And he did. He made it past the narrowest part of the ledge, and Furl followed hard on his heels, kicking gravel out into space and trying not to follow it. The ledge began to widen, and Fatty turned to walk rather than shuffle, even though the ledge was still less than 3 feet wide. Then there was a blur of green past them, and the ledge exploded in front of them. Fatty and Furl both stared at the gap in front of them. It was barely 3 feet across, but there was no room to run for the approach. The far side didn't look stable either.
If you do this, I'll never call you Farty again.
Go bugger yourself.
Kirov scrambled on the other side, but he made it. Another missile hit the rock over Furl's head, and rock chips cut his face and rained down over him. The ledge crumbled under his feet faster than he could scramble up it. He threw out his arms, grabbing for anything. A hand grabbed his. The Baron yanked him to safety.
You saved me. Why did you... Why?
Furl surveyed the rest of the edge. It was another 30 paces before they would disappear around a corner from the Werdmeister. the ledge from here on was 5 feet wide or wider. Too wide for one of the missiles to demolish. But they were still exposed, and Furl, sure as hell, wasn't going to stay in the back anymore. He sheathed his sword and grabbed the Baron, turning him around.
This is the only way we get out of this.
It's fine. I'm not climbing back across that ledge, and I have no idea what to do in the wilderness anyway. I'm with you.
They started back up together, Furl looking at his feet and then at the Birdmeister across the face from them. The young man had a glowing green missile circling slowly around his body. He knew his quarry was getting away from him. The missile started spinning faster and faster. Furl forced the Baron closer to the edge in a silent threat. The missile slowed, and they could see the Birdmeister's mouth moving in inaudible curses. Furl extended his middle finger to the man in a silent salute. A moment later, the Baron copied the gesture. And a stone shifted under Furl's heel as he stepped backward. He was slipping, pulling Baron Kirov right on top of him. There was only one thing to do. He pushed the Baron toward the edge as hard as he could, propelling his own body to safety.
Help!
He landed on his butt on the edge. He could see the Baron's fingers clinging to the edge.
Help!
Furl didn't move. In the end, Fatty was simply too fat. He held on for a moment longer, and his spindly arms couldn't hold him anymore. His fingers slipped off the rock. The fall took a long time, but Fatty never screamed. Together, Furl and the Verdmeister watched him sail to the rocky shores of death. On the other side of the mountain, the Verdmeister's face seemed to fall as far as the Baron's body. The God King was not understanding of failure. Furl scooted back from the edge and around the bend. He congratulated himself on having the foresight to keep the pack. The Geyer estate at Havamir had undergone huge changes since Kyler passed through with Aline and Yuli on the way to Caernarvon. Then it had been nearly empty. Without a lord to protect them, some of the farmers had moved away. The coming harvest and this year's fortunate lack of Curran or Lycanot raids were the only reasons the rest stayed. Now, the estate was filled to overflowing, and it took Kyler only a moment to guess why. The Resistance had moved its base to Havamir. They were a few days' hard ride outside Cenaria, which put them close enough to strike at patrols, but far enough away to flee if the God King mustered a large force against them. The richness of the harvest and the resources of the Geyer household, which included hundreds of the best horses in the country, a substantial armory, and walls that would be defensible, at least against anyone who wasn't using magic, made it a perfect base. Kylo wondered if they had seized it by force, or if the Geyer steward had welcomed the army in. He paused as he first caught sight of the company in the early morning darkness. If Kylo wanted to, he could probably avoid detection, or at least interference. They probably hadn't seen him yet, not in this light, though he had no idea how good their sentries were. Finally, he figured he might as well find out what was happening in Havamir. If Logan were still alive and Kylo managed to rescue him, this would be where they would come. If he could let Logan know what was waiting for him, all the better. Still, before he rode on, he fixed his Durzo disguise to his face. It was much easier than the only other disguise he'd constructed, Baron Kirov, and probably less dangerous. The rebels who knew Baron Kirov would want to kill him. The rebels who knew Durzo would probably pretend they didn't. No one in their right mind would admit to knowing a wet boy, and it was better than going as himself. A Kyler Stern who showed up in the rebel camp was a Kyler Stern who was committing himself to their cause. Besides, he didn't know yet if the Kyler persona was safe. Aline had told Lord General Agon, and Kyler didn't know if Agon had passed the word along. So here he was, sitting on his horse, trying to fix Durzo's face to his. It wasn't easy, even though he'd spent days, weeks, perfecting the disguise. The problems were manifold. First, you had to remember the face perfectly. Even after years of looking at Durzo Blint, that was harder than Kyler would have imagined. He'd spent weeks after initially starting the project, remembering just how the little lines at the corners of Durzo's eyes turned down, placing the pox that had pitted his cheeks, getting the shape of the eyebrows right, adjusting the wisps of his thin beard. Then, when he'd thought he had that perfected, he'd realized he was only beginning. A static face wasn't a disguise. He needed to anchor every moving spot of that face to his, so that it moved almost the same way. Almost. The fact was, even after 10 years of being raised by Durzo and years of picking up little mannerisms from him, Kyler's facial expressions weren't much like Durzo's. So the Durzo face glowered when he frowned, smirked when he smiled, and sneered when he grimaced, plus 100 other things that he'd added as they occurred to him during long hours spent making faces at himself in the mirror. Even then, the disguise wasn't complete. Durzo had been tall. Kyla was just pushing average. So after making his disguise, he projected it upward a good 6 inches. When someone tried to stare Durzo in the eye, he was looking over Kyla's head. It took a lot of discipline to remember to stare at the person's neck, so Durzo would be looking back into their eyes. That was one thing Kyler hadn't fixed yet. He'd tried to make it so he could look wherever he wanted and Durzo's eyes would follow from 6 inches higher, but he hadn't figured out how yet. And of course, if anyone tried to touch the face or the shoulders he projected, the illusion was destroyed. Kyler had tried to make the illusion ethereal, so something that touched it would slip right through. It hadn't worked. The talent mesh, or whatever it was physical. If anything thicker than rain hit it, it broke apart. Kyler had tried to take that the other way, too, and give it physical form, so that light touches against it might feel resistance, like a real face or real shoulders would provide. That hadn't worked either. All in all, it was a damned lot of work for what turned out to be a mediocre disguise. Now Kyler understood why Durzo had preferred makeup. He nudged his horse's flanks with his heels, and they descended into Havamir. The sentries didn't appear surprised to see him riding out of the dawn, so maybe their perimeter was better than he'd thought.
State your business!
I'm a native of Sonaria, but I've lived in Caernarvon for the last few years. I heard things had settled down for the most part. I've got family in Sonaria, and I'm going to see if they're all right.
What's your trade?
I'm an herb merchant and apothecary. Normally, I'd take the opportunity to bring some herbs along with me, but my last cargo was destroyed by bandits. The bastards burned my wagon when they found it didn't have any gold in it. Tell me, who did that help? Anyway, I can make better time this way.
Are you armed?
Of course I'm armed. Do you think I'm mad?
Fair enough. Go ahead.
Kylo rode into the camp that was spread out before Havamir's gates. It was well organized, laid out in neat rows with toilets at regular intervals away from the cooking pits, numerous permanent or semi-permanent buildings, and clear lanes for foot and horse traffic. But it wasn't very military. Some of the structures looked like they were planning on staying through the winter, but the fortifications around the camp were laughable. From the looks of things, all the nobles and their personal guards had taken residence in the Geyer estate, while the soldiers and civilians who had thrown in their lot with the rebels were out here, trying their best to make do. Kyla was looking at a wood building, trying to divine its purpose, when he almost rode down a man wearing a pince-nez and limping on a cane. The man looked up and appeared as shocked as Kyla was.
Durzo, I thought you were dead.
Kyla froze. It was so good to see Count Drake alive that his control of the disguise almost wavered. The Count looked older now, careworn. He'd walked with a limp since Kyler had known him, but he'd never needed a cane before.
Is there some place we can talk, Count Drake?
Yes, of course. Why are you calling me that? You haven't called me Count Drake in years.
It has been a while. How did you get out?
Are you well?
Dismounting, Kyler extended his hand and clasped Count Drake's wrist. The man clasping his wrist back felt real, solid, the way Count Drake had always felt. He was an anchor, and Kyla was overwhelmed between an urge to tell him everything and shame just as strong. The danger in talking to Count Drake was that everything became clear as he listened. Decisions that had seemed so muddy became suddenly simple. Something in Kyler shied away from that. If Count Drake really knew him, he'd stop loving him. A wet boy doesn't have friends. Count Drake led him to a tent near the center of the camp. The Count sat in a chair, his leg obviously stiff.
It's a little drafty, but we're still here. We'll shore it up before winter.
We?
My wife and Alina and I. Sarah and Magdalene didn't make it out. Sarah was a comfort woman. We heard she hanged herself with her bed sheets. Magdalene is either a comfort woman or one of the God King's concubines, last we heard. Most of them don't last very long.
I'm so sorry.
Comfort women. Bound into the cruelest, most dehumanizing form of slavery Kyla knew. Magically sterilized and given a room in the Caladoran barracks for the convenience of the soldiers. A convenience used dozens of times a day. His stomach churned.
Yes, it's an open wound. Our Caladoran brethren have given themselves over to the worst appetites. Let's talk about the war we have to win. Elena, could you heat up some utai for us? Aderzo, you remember my daughter.
Elena, right?
Pleased to meet you.
So what's your title or position here?
Titles, position. Terra Grayson has been bargaining off titles, trying to tie families into the rebellion. But when it comes to actually getting things done, she's glad to have my help.
You're joking.
Afraid not. That's why we're still here. What is it? 3 months since our coup? She's only allowed small raids against supply lines and poorly defended outposts. She's afraid that if we get handed a big loss, the families will back out and swear allegiance to the God King.
That's no way to win a war.
No one knows how to win a war against Calidor. Nobody's fought successfully against an army reinforced with witches in decades. There are reports that the Caladorans are having troubles along the Frieze. She's hoping that most of them will be sent home before the snows block Screaming Winds.
I thought we held Screaming Winds.
We did. I even got news from my friend Solent of Fusen to signal them when we were ready to march for war. The garrison there had the best Cenarian troops in the realm. Veterans, every one.
And?
They're all dead. Killed themselves, or lay down and just let someone slit their throats. My spies say it was the work of the goddess Kali. That just adds to the Duchess's caution.
Terra Grayson does most of her campaigning on her back.
Elena!
It's true! I spend every day with her maids-in-waiting.
Elena!
Sorry.
Kyla was shaken. It was impossible. Gods were superstition and madness. But what superstition would drive hundreds of veterans to suicide? Alina hadn't taken her eyes off Kyla since he came into the tent. She looked at him like he was going to try to steal something.
So, what's the plan?
So far as I can tell, there isn't one. She talked about a big offensive, but I'm afraid she doesn't know what to do. She's been trying to hire wet boys. There was even a Yomori stalker here a few weeks ago. Scary sort. But I think she's trying to stack the deck but not play the game. She's gathering an army, but she doesn't know what to do with it. She's a political creature, not a martial one. She doesn't have any military men in her circle.
It sounds like this is going to be the shortest-lived rebellion in history.
Stop encouraging me. So, what brings you here? Not work, I hope.
What kind of work do you do?
Elena, be silent or be gone.
When Kyla looked up, Elena's expression had changed altogether. Her eyes were bright and wide.
It is you, Kyla!
The Count was shocked into silence. Kyla looked at him, aghast.
You big oaf, hug me!
Kyla hugged her. Gods, it felt good. Really, really good to be hugged.
Oh, mercy. Please, I beg of you.
Oh, Kyla, that was so the slam. How did you do that? Can you teach me? Will you, please?
Elena, let the man breathe. I should have recognized the voice.
My voice?
Oh, darn.
Altering his voice would either require some great acting, which seemed to be beyond him, or more magic. That meant more hours working with a single disguise. When would he find the time to do that?
Well, it would seem we need to talk. Shall Elena be excused?
Don't make me go, Father.
Yes. See you, Squirt.
I don't want to go!
Count Drake gave her a look and she wilted. She marched out. Then they were alone.
What happened to you, son?
Sir, do you think a man can change?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But usually he just becomes more himself. Why don't you tell me everything?
So Kyler did. Everything from the Jodwin estate, to breaking his oaths to Aline and Yuli, and the raw, gnawing sore that left in his stomach. Finally, he was finished.
I could have stopped it. I could have ended the war before it began. I'm so sorry. Mags and Sarah would be safe if I'd killed Durzo before...
No, son. Stop that.
What would you have done, sir?
If I knew stabbing Durzo in the back would save Sarah and Magdalene, I'd have stabbed him, son. But it wouldn't really be the right thing to do. Unless you're a king or a general, the only life you have the right to sacrifice for the greater good is your own. You did the right thing. Now, let's talk about this little jaunt to the mall. Are you sure this rumor is true?
The Shinga came to tell me himself, and died for it.
Jarl's dead.
You knew about Jarl?
He's been talking with me. He was planning an uprising to give us a chance to split Ursul's forces. They believed in him. They loved him. Even the thieves and killers were beginning to believe that they could have a new start.
Sir, after I rescued Logan...
Don't say it.
I'm gonna go after Mags.
You save Logan Gaia, and you do it fast. Ulana will be sorry she missed you, but you have to go now.
Kyler stood and replaced the Durzo mask. Count Drake watched, and his face regained some life.
You know, you have tricks that are... well... The slam.
One more question. I've been thinking that it might be good for rumors to get out that Logan is alive before he shows up. I mean, it will give the people something to hope for, and it will make it easier for him to consolidate power when he does appear. Should I tell Tara Grayson he's alive?
It's a little late for that.
It was Tara Grayson, in a lavish green dress and cloak lined with new mink. She was smiling a thin smile.
Why, Durzo Blint, I haven't seen you in ages.
Usually, Gareth summoned his concubines to his rooms, but sometimes he liked to surprise them. Magdalene Drake had entertained him for a long time, but as always, his interest was beginning to wane. Tonight, he'd woken hours past midnight with the infernal itch and a headache and an idea. He would enter silently and wake Magdalene roughly. He loved Magdalene's scream. He would beat her savagely and accuse her of plotting against him. If she begged and swore it wasn't true, like most frightened women would, he'd throw her off the balcony. If she cursed him, he would bang her, matching her defiance with an equal degree of brutality. And she would live another day. Before he left, he would hold her tenderly in his arms and whisper that he was sorry, that he loved her. Decent women always wanted to see something good in him. He shivered in anticipation. He extended the veer through the closed door, hoping to detect the even sound of her breathing in sleep. Instead, he felt something different. She was awake. Gareth opened the door, but she didn't notice him. She was sitting on her bed facing the open door to her railless balcony. She was dressed only in a thin nightgown, but she didn't seem to feel the cold air blowing in the open door. She was rocking back and forth.
Damn you, whore.
She didn't respond. He touched her skin, and it too was cold. She must have been sitting like this for hours. Other concubines had pretended madness in an attempt to escape his attentions. Maybe Magdalene Drake was the same. Gareth slapped her and she fell off the bed. Grabbing a fistful of dark hair, Gareth dragged her onto the balcony. Coming right to the edge, he pulled her to her feet. He grabbed her throat in one thick hand and pushed her back until her toes were barely on the edge. His fingers wrapped almost all the way around her throat. He took care to choke her as little as possible, but if he released her, she would fall. Her eyes finally came into focus. The shadow of death tended to have that effect on people.
Why? Why do you do this?
It pleases me.
And strangely, but Magdalene Drake had always been a strange girl. It was part of why she appealed to him. Magdalene smiled. She pulled toward him, but not like a woman dangling off a precipice would pull toward her only hope of life. She kissed him. If it was an act, it was a damn convincing one. If her mind had broken, it had broken in an intriguing way. Magdalene Drake kissed him, and Gareth swore it was with real desire. His arousal came back, stronger than ever as she climbed him, her lean young legs wrapping around his waist. He thought of taking her back inside, but it was impossible to stay fully in control. About to make love with a woman who might be trying to kill him, she kissed her way to his ears.
I've been listening to you, Annev.
He usually didn't let his concubines talk while he fucked them, unless they were cursing him. But Gareth didn't want to destroy this fragile insanity. Magdalene leaned back. Holding him with her legs, she let go of his neck and leaned back. He grabbed onto her hips to keep her from plunging to her death. Upside down, she waved her arms above her head, looking over the castle and the city below. Gareth's pulse pounded loud in his ears. He didn't even care who might be watching. Whatever kind of madness this was, it was intoxicating.
Let go.
What?
Let go.
She seemed to have a tight grip with her legs, so he let go, ready to catch her with a veer if need be. He wasn't going to let this end without taking his pleasure. Not now. Magdalene tugged her nightgown free from where it was trapped between their bodies and stripped it off. She dropped it over the edge. Then she sat up and kissed Gareth again, pressing her young body against him. She stripped his robe back roughly, then she burrowed into him.
I heard you. I heard you talking about the Night Angel, Kyla Stern. I want you to know something. Kyla's my brother. He's coming for me, you dirty fucker, and if I don't kill you, he will.
She bit his carotid artery as hard as she could and tried to throw them both off the edge. The veer reacted before Gareth could, exploding at his neck. The veer lashed from his limbs, flinging him aside even as Magdalene Drake spun out into space. He stood shakily and summoned Neff. The Verdmeister found him standing on the balcony, looking at the ruin of the young woman crushed in the courtyard below.
Take care of her, Neff. Tell Trudana I expect the best. Hers was a great spirit.
Shall I, shall I send in another concubine?
Yes.
If you'll excuse us, Count Drake, I have need of your quarters.
Count Drake limped out on his cane as several guards took up position outside the tent. Kyla was still reeling. Tara Grayson knew Durzo. That meant he was supposed to know her, and he didn't. If she knew Durzo, that meant she knew Durzo through his work. That meant she had hired him.
So, Logan's alive. That's terrific.
Everything about Tara Grayson was reputed to be beautiful. Kyla didn't see it. Oh, she was pretty. She had a wide mouth, full lips, and the kind of figure that was unattainable for the majority of noble women who spent their days doing nothing more strenuous than issuing orders to the servants. Maybe it was that she was a little too self-consciously good-looking. She wore lots of makeup, expertly applied and subtle, but lots, and had tweezed her eyebrows down to tiny lines. The truth was, she held herself like he ought to admire her, and it pissed him off. What pissed him off more was that to look her in the eye with his disguise, he had to stare straight at her admittedly perky breasts. Damn it. Why were breasts so intriguing?
So, Who's paying you to save Logan Gaia?
You don't really expect me to answer that.
Master Blint, you're the only man I know who's killed two kings. How much can I pay you to kill a third?
What? You want me to kill the God King?
No. Simply don't save Logan Gaia. I'll double whatever your employer is paying.
What? Why? You need all the allies you can get right now. Logan would bring thousands to your banners.
The problem is... Well, can you keep a secret, Durzo?
Would you trust a murderer with your secrets?
I knew you'd say that. You said the same thing last time, remember?
It's been a while.
Well, I'm glad you remembered long enough to kill my father.
Kyla blinked.
Tell me, did you do it before or after you killed King Gunder?
I'm paid to kill, not talk about it.
And that's why I can trust you. Though I will remind you that I've already given you money for not killing me, so you can't do to me what I did to my father.
Of course not.
It took Kyla a second to puzzle it out. She must have met Durzo when the wet boy had taken a job for her father, Duke Gordon Grayson. Perhaps Gordon had hired Durzo to kill King Davin. Duke Grayson must have thought Regnus Gaia would become king after King Davin died, thereby making Gordon's other daughter, Katrina, a queen. Logan's mother, Katrina Grayson, had been Terra's half-sister, though older than Terra by almost 20 years.
So, why let Logan die?
Because I don't give up things that belong to me easily, Durzo Blint, as you know.
Don't you think you might want to worry about taking the throne from the Caladorans before you worry about murdering your allies?
I don't need a civics lesson. Are you interested in making money for doing nothing, or do you wish to make me your enemy? I will be queen one day, and you'll find me an implacable foe.
7,000 crowns. How do I know you're good for it? If the Caladorans wipe you out, I'm not getting stiffed.
Now, there's the Durzo Blint I remember.
Terra pulled a fat ring off her finger with an even fatter ruby in it.
Please don't pawn it. It belonged to my father, and it's not worth even half of the 8,000 I'll give you for it after I take the throne. There'll be a bonus if you bring me proof of Logan's death.
Fair enough.
I foresee some of my allies becoming... problematic in the future. I'll have other jobs for you. That is, if you haven't lost your edge.
What's that supposed to mean?
When you didn't answer my summons a month ago... I had to go elsewhere.
You'll never find anyone as good as me.
Terra Grayson licked her lips and her eyes filled with sudden hunger. Kyla didn't recognize the look, but he didn't like it, whatever it was. She smiled.
Well then, good day.
Terra stepped close to him to kiss each of his cheeks. It put his real face right at the level of her chest, but he was lucky. She didn't lean close enough to touch either his real lips with her breasts or his phantom cheek with her lips. The illusion stayed intact. As soon as she was gone, he fled. He jumped on his horse and went north out of the camp, worried that Terra might have someone watching the western exit. He shifted his disguise so that Durzo's face was where his own was, rather than above it, so that he could see the guard's expression. The guards let him out without question, however, and when he was a mile out, he began to let down his guard. His heart was still pounding as he thought about what this meant for Logan. Even if he got his friend out of the maw, the road ahead wouldn't be easy. At least now, he would know who his enemies were. Kyler entered a thin stretch of trees when something whispered coolly in his mind.
Duck. What?
An arrow drove through Kyler's chest. It rocked him back in the saddle, but his horse kept walking, oblivious. Kyler had made so many mistakes. Durzo would never have forgiven him for his carelessness. Letting down his guard, going back to the path when he'd worried someone might have been sent after him, taking his own horse rather than stealing someone else's. It only took one mistake to get you killed, and he'd made many.
I told you to duck.
A shadowy form stepped out from behind a tree and took his horse's reins in one hand, holding a sword in the other. The wet boy let down his shadows. They weren't nearly as good as Durzo's, never mind Kyler's. It was scarred Rabel.
Whoa, son of a bitch! Durzo Blint! Shit.
Howdy, Ben.
Son of a bitch was right. He'd kept the Durzo disguise, and if he'd kept it at Durzo's height, Ben Rabel would have shot his arrow right over Kyler's shoulder. It was taking more and more effort to maintain the Durzo disguise, and Kyla was painfully aware that it was important he do so. If Terra thought she'd killed Durzo, Kyla could still come back. That had its own set of problems, but far fewer than revealing that he was both Durzo Blint and Kyla Stern, and immortal.
Shit, Durzo! I didn't even know it was you! That uppity grazing bitch said, special job, easy, pay you double. What the hell are you riding on a path for, D?
Oh, just made a mistake.
It only takes one, I guess. Shit, buddy. I would have fought you at least.
I would have killed you.
Probably. Shit!
Scard had gained his nickname from the innumerable scars he had on his face. He'd come to Sonaria as a child from somewhere in Friaku and spent time as a slave. He was one of the few men who'd gained his freedom from the fighting pits. Kyla thought the scars were self-inflicted, but the man spoke without an accent. Whatever rituals he practiced, he'd learned from rumors about the Friaki, not from observation.
How am I supposed to brag about this, Durzo? I just shot you with a goddamn arrow. There's no way to kill the world's greatest wet boy.
Oh, seems to be working all right.
Shit.
Make something up.
I can't do that. It dishonors the dead. They haunt you if you do that.
I feel really fucking sorry for you.
Wait. You mean it would honor you more if people thought you'd been killed in heroic combat? You let me say that and not haunt me. I'd make you sound good, I swear.
Depends. Are you going to hack anything off my corpse?
That bitch did want proof.
Take her the ring. Take my horse, my clothes. Whatever you need. But leave my body alone. Say you're superstitious or something. And you can tell the story however you want. Just put my body...
Kyler's head was getting thick. He thought he could feel his heart laboring as blood spilled inside his chest.
Fair enough. You ready, friend?
Rabel stabbed him through the heart.
I've been working on the web.
It's trapped in some really interesting ways. Who put it on you again?
How about if I tell you let me go?
They were heading back to the trail after taking a huge detour around the rebel camp at Havamir. V could tell that Sister Ariel had wanted to go into the camp, but thought that it would give V chances to escape.
Why are we going west? I thought the Chantry was northeast.
It is, but I still haven't finished what I was sent to do.
What was that?
Yuli was sitting on the cantle behind V right now, and both of them were leashed magically. V was glad that Yuli asked the question. Sister Ariel answered Yuli's questions. That probably had something to do with V's repeated escape attempts, which had left them both bruised and irritable.
I'm looking to recruit someone special, and I'm hoping I can find a woman who fits the bill in the rebel camp. Unfortunately, I don't trust V as far as I can throw her.
That's pretty far. So I don't count as someone special? You already said I'm vastly talented, or whatever.
Oh, you're both very special. But neither of you qualifies for what I need.
What do you mean, both of us?
I'm taking you both to the Chantry, but neither of you can fulfill...
Why are you taking us both?
Yuli's talented, V.
What?
Oh, it's rare to find talented women, I don't deny it. But if only one woman in 1,000 is talented... That doesn't mean that you only find 2 talented women together once in 1,000,000 times. You see?
No.
People with the talent tend to feel an affinity for each other, even if neither of them knows why. We frequently find them together, which is great for us, usually. Perhaps you're too young for this much truth, Yulisandra. But that affinity is probably the only reason why an otherwise heartless murderer didn't add you to her already overburdened conscience.
You mean she would have killed me? Would you, V?
V was glad the girl was sitting behind her, so she couldn't see the guilt written all over V's face. Why did she care what Yuli thought?
You can look at it in a negative light or a positive one, Yulisandra. Negative. She normally would have killed you. Positive. She didn't. And she's had many opportunities to change her mind since then and still hasn't. You might even say, V likes you.
Do you like me, V?
I'd like to kick you in the head.
Don't take it too hard. With the way she was raised, V's a... Well, let's be charitable. Let's call her an emotional cripple. She's probably only poorly able to differentiate between most of her emotions, feeling comfortable only with rage, anger, and condescension because they make her feel strong. Indeed, I'd guess her interactions with you may well be the first positive one she's had in her entire life.
Stop it!
This is positive?
She doesn't shy away from your touch, Yuli. When you ride with her, she's at ease. For anyone else, she'd be constantly on guard.
I'll kill the little wench the first chance I get.
Bluster.
What's that mean?
It means horse shit.
So you just keep being nice to her, Yuli. Because probably no one else in your Tiro class will like her very much.
In our class? You're putting me with the children?
Oh, yes. And you should be nice to Yuli Sandra. Because she's got more talent than you do. And none of your bad habits.
You cruel, cruel bitch. I know what you're doing. You're trying to break me, but I'll tell you what. Nothing can break me. I've been through everything.
Sister Ariel turned her face to the setting sun that limed the treetops of a small copse in front of them.
That, my dear, is where you're wrong. You were already broken, V. You were broken years ago and you healed hunched. And now you're broken again and trying to heal even more hunched. I won't let that happen. I'll break you one more time if I have to, so you don't have to be a cripple anymore. But I can't make the choice to be healthy for you. And I don't promise a lack of scars. But you can be a better woman than you are now.
A woman who looks a lot like you?
Oh, no. You're more passionate than I ever was. I'm afraid I'm a bit of an emotional cripple myself. Too much brain, they say. Too comfortable in my own mind. I never had to come out.